Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But first, comedian, TV host, Emmy winner, and now Dublin resident, Rosie O'Donnell is here live in studio. Rosie, you're very welcome on this beautiful morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Delighted. Now, listen, I was going to start gently this morning, finding out about your family, your path into comedy. But yesterday, the President of the United States of America, where you were born and raised,
yes, indeed,
threatened to take away your citizenship. How do you react to that?
Well, I reacted with a little post that I jotted off in 5 minutes, and that's been getting a lot of attention online. But, you know, this guy is a danger to the world. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I told the truth about him on a show called The View, which is similar to Loose Women, where women get together, four women or five, and talk about politics and current events. And he had just had a press conference for the Miss Teen USA from his pageant, who had been caught in the village kissing a girl. And the Daily News and the New York Post put a picture of her on the cover, and he was furious. And so he had her crying on TV, apologizing to America for, I guess, embarrassing him. And it looked very much to me like a pimp with his prostitute. So we were live 5 minutes after, and that was a topic. And I simply told the truth about who he is as a person. Facts, no lies, no hyperbole, just facts. And he went crazy. That was 2006, and he still uses me as a punching bag and a way to sort of rile his base. And I am very proud to be opposed to every single thing he says and does and represents. I think he's a racist, and he's misogynistic, and he's sexist, and he is a danger to women and children all over the world.
Out of interest, where were you yesterday? Like, I can't imagine how stressful it must be if either you wake up, you suddenly hear that the President of the United States of America has personally put out a message threatening to take away your citizenship. How did you hear about it?
I was sitting home getting ready to watch the tennis, Wimbledon. I'm a big fan of tennis. And I got a text from a friend of mine, Victor, who works in Democratic politics. And he said, are you okay? And I said, I think so. Why? And he goes, you didn't see it. I said, see what? And he sent me the text. And it had a red check instead of a blue check. So I thought it was a fake account. I said, oh, that's kind of funny, but it's fake. And he said, it's not fake. It's on his Truth Social. I don't go on Truth Social. I don't follow him or anything. And I was like, you're sure it's real? He said, yeah, it's real. I said, okay, give me 5 minutes. And then I sat down and wrote the reply and posted it. And to tell you the truth, that was kind of the end of it for me, because I know he can't do that. But the Supreme Court has given him unbridled powers, and who knows what he can and can't do. He shouldn't be allowed to be doing what he is to immigrants in the United States without due process, but he's doing it anyway. People are being tased in Walmart. People are being beaten and rounded up and put in concentration camps. This is not America. This is not democracy. And fascism has a foothold in the United States. And unless we take a stand right now against him and everything he represents, we're done as a country. We're done as a democracy. It was a couple hundred year experiment that didn't end well. But I can't really let it rest and let it be done with until the very last battle, because it's like between the light and the dark. And he is darkness itself.
Is it stressful, though? I mean, he can say that, right, and threaten your citizenship. As you say, he can't actually do that.
Correct.
But he has a lot of supporters.
Yes.
So by saying that, that's quite a threatening thing to put out there. Do you worry about that?
Well, the thing is, there's a long list of celebrities he's threatened, including Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift, Meryl Streep, Robert De Niro, Mark Ruffalo. There are activists, artists who have always spoken out in their lives and career. It's part of their public persona and their essence. And he's against all of us. So I didn't take it personally, but I will tell you the way that he is has emboldened people like him. And I believe that the country's followers of MAGA are in a cult. They're in a cult, and he is their leader, and they were lied to for over 10 years on a show called The Apprentice by Mark Burnett, the producer, who edited around his failings and his insecurities and his racism, and put out a show that was a lie, that he was a successful businessman with moxie and panache, and he never was. He's a logo slapper. He doesn't build buildings. He sells his name to builders. And then he puts gold lame letters everywhere around his buildings. And they're not good quality. And, you know, he had a steak business that went under. He had a fake university. He's been sued 26 times for not paying or people back. 26 charges for him from women for sexual abuse. This is a very, very bad man. And they refuse to see it. They have willful blindness. Willful. They refuse to say the emperor has no clothes, and he does not.
And I suppose I would push back on that.
Yes, okay.
To say, I suppose it is a democracy.
Yes.
They voted for him. Well, many people did. Is it that they feel so left aside, so let down maybe by the way parts of the states are run, that they felt they had to turn to him? That he looked to them like he's going to be their savior, even though, as you say, he's definitely not.
Well, and his policies are affecting them, too. Look what happened in Texas. You know, Texas is a red state, and we hope to turn it blue, but it is a red state, and all the floods that happened there. And, you know, if you don't think there's a correlation between all of the people that he cut from the National Weather Service, from the people who predicted these storms, from the warning systems, you're wrong. And I brought that up, and people were very angry. How could you bring that up in the midst of this tragedy? Well, two things can be true at the same time. I can be grieving for all those children and people and all of the flood waters that happened and took so many lives senselessly. And I also can say the consequence of his actions was partly responsible for this. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't negate my feelings of empathy and compassion for the lives lost.
And what would you say, though, to the people who vote for him?
Oh,
that they're all misguided, misled?
Well, I would say that they were lied to for so long by the Celebrity Apprentice, which got higher ratings than the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Higher ratings than the Super Bowl for a decade. And they believed that myth that they were sold. And now many of them are going, I'm sorry for what I did. I didn't know. Well, you could have known had you read Project 2025, had you did a basic Google search on him and all the lawsuits that he's filed, how litigious he is, all of the sex abuse cases that he settled, all the people that he's threatened. It's not that hard to find out the facts about him. But if you choose not to, you know, and I also think Elon Musk had a tremendous amount to do with the voting irregularities. He won all seven swing states. That's never happened in the history of our election.
Now, I would push back again and say, do you not then risk doing exactly what his side would say, that there was election rigging? I mean, at the end of the day,
yes.
You either accept the results of an election or you don't. Isn't that a dangerous slippery slope?
I think we have to research it. We have to look at the anomalies. We have to say, how is it that this never happened before? How is it that people voted for him, but then Democrats all the rest of the way down the ticket? Rockland County, where I raise my children, has just filed a lawsuit that has been approved and now goes to the next level to look into these anomalies in our county. Our county, like, no one voted for Kamala Harris. That's an impossibility statistically. Especially in a blue New York state. So I believe that Elon Musk had a tremendous amount to do with the election results and with all of the inconsistencies in them.
Now, there are voters, many, who don't have regrets about voting, who are still happy with the election result. And Democrats, maybe, they just didn't ever understand that demographic. Would you accept that?
I do. And I think the Democrats dropped the ball tremendously. I think that when Biden was deteriorating and he had some sort of dementia happening, as does President Trump, that they turned a blind eye and they tried to prop him up and they allowed him to run again. And that was a huge mistake. And then, you know, Kamala Harris tried to play catch up with a shortened election term and candidate time to run. And, you know, I think America, too, innately racist and sexist, and that they weren't going to vote for a black woman. But it's been black women who have been the backbone of the Democratic Party historically.
You mentioned earlier, obviously, other people like Bruce Springsteen, President Trump has criticized them. But what do you think it is about you, Rosie, that so gets under his skin that, what, 19 years later, he's still getting up and sending those messages about you yesterday? What is it about you?
Well, I think it's because we grew up in the same area. Now, I'm 63. He's like 107 or something. I don't know. Like, he's in his late, he's 80, right? So it's a 20-year, 17-year difference. And I think I remind him of all the kids at school who never liked him. This was, you know, I'm a tough New York tomboy girl. And I think that his crap never flew with me or with New Yorkers. And if you grew up in New York at the same time I did, and he was in the periphery of your life, you would know what every New Yorker knows, is that he's a joke. He's a con man and he's a criminal. And nobody was fooled in New York by him. Nobody. And when he ran for office, it was such a joke. Like, I was certain that he would never win. But again, sexist America not wanting Hillary Clinton, the most qualified candidate that the Democrats have ever put up. I think that's the truth. And so I do think the Democrats dropped the ball in a lot of ways. And I hope it's not too late. But you know what, Miriam? I feel it. I feel that it is.
You mentioned there you're a mom of five. We'll move on from what happened yesterday now. But are they upset by those messages? I mean, you're like me, you're quite a tough person. We've come to this stage in our lives. But what about your children? Were they upset yesterday?
Well, my little one who's 12, who has autism, Clay is the name. And they said, I go, you know what just happened? She said, what's that? I said, the president is threatening to take away my citizenship. And she says, ha ha, we already moved. So she was fine. Okay. But my 22-year-old was quite upset. She called very worried. She was at a graduation party. She just graduated from college with honors, I might add.
Congratulations.
And I just set her up in New York with her own apartment, and she's on her way, you know. And she was very upset and very worried. And she's like, are you okay? I'm at a party and we're about to start drinking and I don't want to drink in case you need me. I'm like, honey, I'm good, sweetheart. I'm okay. I'm watching tennis. I'm good. I'm sitting here, we're going to go out to dinner with friends. And we did. We went out to O'Reilly's Pub in Sandy Mount, into the beer garden in the back. Not one person says a thing about it. He's not on the radar here in the way he is in the United States. In the United States, and part of the reason that I moved to Ireland, people would come over to me and comment on him. People in MAGA hats would say, hey, liberals suck. And I'm with my little 12-year-old or 10-year-old kid going, what? And the first 4 years that he was in were very difficult for me because of this, because of people feeling they have the right to say whatever they want to me because he abuses me, so why shouldn't they? So that I wasn't willing to take for another 4 years. But I also knew I was incapable of not speaking up about injustices.
Let's go back to the young Rosie. Tell me about your childhood and your mom, first of all.
She was very funny, my mother. She was very much community activated. She was the head of the parish council at Christ the King. She was the president of the Parent Teacher Association in our school, Rolling Hills Elementary School. She was the Girl Scout leader. She was very involved, and she was an only child. And she got sick in like November of 1972 and died on St. Patrick's Day, 1973, 4 days before my 11th birthday. And that was the defining moment of my life. It was as if the color was sucked out like a reverse Wizard of Oz, right? First Dorothy singing over the rainbow, and the next thing you're in Kansas with a dead mother and no ruby slippers. And you think to yourself, whose life is this and how do I go on? You know, and my father wasn't very present in our lives before she died. And then he was thrown into, you know, he was there, but he was emotionally distant and not really able to take care of the needs of his children. And so we were like five orphan kids who had to survive ourselves. But before my mother died, she taught each of us how to cook one meal. so that we would have food during the week. And my meal was London broil. And I remember being in the kitchen when she taught me. She bought a new Pyrex dish, which we didn't have Pyrex dishes, but she bought this. She goes, this is what you marinate it in. She showed me the piece of London broil, how to stab it with a big fork, and then pour Viva Italian Seven Seas dressing on it and flip it as much as I could and leave it overnight, and then how to cook it in the oven. And that was my meal every Wednesday that I did for my whole childhood. And my brother Eddie made chicken, and Maureen made spaghetti. And the only one who didn't was my brother Timmy, who was only 5 years old when she died. And I think I was always the saddest for him. And shortly after my mother died, he got very sick. And he was throwing up one day, and I lifted him up and walked through the vomit and held his head. And he was throwing up and turned his head and looked at me and said, you have to be the mommy now. And that hit me deep because I'm the oldest girl and I'm named after my mother. And after she died, my father took us to Ireland. And when we came back, everything of hers was out of the house. The neighbors and the aunts and stuff had taken her clothing and her jewelry and all the things that represented my mother, except her Barbra Streisand records. Because she loved Barbra Streisand. And when we came home from school and Barbra Streisand was on, we knew it was going to be a good day. And if you came home from school and no music was on, or Paul Simon, Bridge Over Troubled Water, Simon and Garfunkel was on, you knew she was in sadness, you know. Mm-hmm. She too, like I do, struggled with depression. Many Irish people do. And I think she fought it really hard and valiantly. But the cancer, when they opened her up, was everywhere. So they just sewed her back up and said, you know, go home and spend as much time as you can with your children. And she did. She lay on the green couch in our nice living room where nobody ever was. And she made sure to put old sheets on the couch so she wouldn't ruin it. And we would come in one at a time and have conversations with her. I remember she taught me how to use a dictionary. I was confused about how to find the word. I'd like just go to the letter B looking for beautiful and just keep looking. I didn't realize the letters were in order. And so she taught me that. But very sadly, the last thing she said to me was when we were doing that dictionary learning, and I leaned in to get closer to her, to the couch. I was sitting on the floor, and she said, careful, Roseanne, careful, because I had hit her suture. And the day after that, she went to the hospital, and then we never saw her again.
And was she mentioned in your home?
Never. The word mommy was never mentioned. The word mother, you would just skip it. If someone called on the phone and said, is your mom home? We'd say she's at the store or she's in the shower. Because I didn't really believe that she had died, because my father took my little sister and I to the wake, and it was an open casket. And it was jam-packed with people. And we went up to the body, and my sister said, loud enough for people to hear, is mommy sleeping? Everyone started crying and yelling. And my father whisked us out, drove us home, and said, you're not going to the funeral. And so I never went to the funeral. So I didn't have that kind of final closure. I didn't have the whole mass. And I know mass was vitally important to her. We went to mass every Sunday. And after she died, we went back one time. And you know how in church they say, and for those in our parish who have passed away, especially, and then they'd say the name, they said Roseanne O'Donnell, and my brother Danny started crying, and then everyone started crying, and then my father whisked us out, and we never went back to church.
Wow. And you mentioned your dad there, and I'm not going to go in, because I know you've spoken before about abuse from your dad, but explain, I think this is really interesting that you come from a shared family, you have siblings, and some of your brothers get upset, don't they, when you talk about your dad?
You know, I have two older brothers, and
you know, they've asked that I not bring it up. Mm. And I sort of feel about a shared childhood like I would about a timeshare of a condo. Mm. You don't go in on the week that you're there and get to rearrange the furniture and paint all the rooms and change the essence. And even though, you know, we've had our own discussions and everyone is on the same page, they would prefer that I didn't discuss it. So I try as hard as I can not to, out of respect for them. You know, my two brothers I'm very close to, Eddie and Timmy, the oldest and the youngest. My two middle siblings were kind of estranged. There is a group of three and then the group of two. Mm. And it seems never the twain shall meet. But, you know, when you don't have parents, when you don't have a mother to say, you're all showing up for Christmas and I don't want to hear it, you know.
You're going to be there.
You're going to be there. That's what I would do to my kid. I don't care what you're doing. You're going, you know. And we didn't have that. So there was nobody to wrangle us and to force us to communicate. And we hadn't learned how to communicate because the communicator died.
But Eddie, your brother, is great on the factual Irish history, isn't he?
He knows all the family history. He's the oldest. He has all the photos. He has all the, you know, when I was coming to Ireland, he's the one who got all the information for me to apply for my citizenship on my grandparents, where they were born.
Where were they born?
I can look it up on my phone because, from Eddie. My grandparents were born in Tyrone and Donegal. And, near where where he took us back to.
Boy, and that was Pettigo.
Pettigo, yes.
Which is a fantastic place, Pettigo, just on the border.
Just on the border. And I had cousins who were about 17 or 18, and they would take us in the woods and fire cap guns just to watch the British helicopters come. And we thought this was a fun game, you know. But at the time, I didn't realize how dangerous it was. But, you know, when your life is you're a teenager growing up right on the border of Northern Ireland, this permeates every cell in your body, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they taught us the Irish. My father would teach us the Irish rebel songs, and we would sing them when we were there and in the car as loud as we could. And now I think of it, that would be a funny scene in a movie to have all of these American kids, of tiny little American kids singing, Roddy McCauley goes to die on the bridge of Toulm today.
I love it. Listen, you're going to stay with me, Rosie.
Totally.
I'm
here for you.
I'm here for you. Thanks so much. Let's take a break.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Welcome back. I'm here this morning with the fabulous Rosie O'Donnell. So you've moved to Ireland.
Yes.
How is it?
It's fantastic. And I had no idea what to expect. Now, I had that experience when I was very young. And then I came back to do Who Do You Think You Are about 12 years ago with my brother, Eddie, the keeper of all knowledge. And so we came back and did that and were mostly in Dublin. And I loved it. And so when I knew I had to get out of the United States, there was not a conversation about where to go. I knew where I was going to go. And I had just done my 23andMe, and we were 100% Irish, which I think is very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to go back to the old country. And so I did. And I didn't know what to expect. And I think that Ireland should win the nicest people in the nation award, because people are so unbelievably welcoming, and there's no celebrity culture here, which I love.
No one cares.
Nobody cares, and no one should. Yeah. And in America, you're exalted. You're held on a different level. People look at you different. They treat you different. Like, I used to love when I would go into the supermarket and be able to make the cashiers laugh. But once you're known, they don't want to laugh. They want to, like, stare at you. And, you know, it's not an equal interaction of humans. And it got very lonely for me. So being back here reminds me of before I was famous, where I know the ladies' names at the Tesco and I know the bartender at my local pub. And, you know, it's a beautiful, wonderful, smaller, manageable life. And it suits myself and my child very well.
Yeah, she seems to love it here.
She loves it here. She said it's better. She said, Mommy, you know what? You can almost be a normal person here.
As well as TV course, stand-up, you've also had a great career as an actor. I have a terrible soft spot for A League of Their Own with the great Madonna. Yeah. You were in Sleepless in Seattle. You've played a nun most recently. What class of a nun, by the way?
I'm not really sure, but probably something not too severe as she falls in love with Cynthia Nixon and has a romantic night or two with her. So it was a wonderful episode, and I love the writer, Michael Patrick King. We've known each other since our days in stand-up in the early 80s. And he wrote this part for me, and Cynthia and I have been close friends for about 30 years. I love her acting, her activism, her parenting, her partner. I love everything about her. So it wasn't really hard to play someone in love with her. And it was a very big Broadway enthusiast who comes to New York and has a one-night stand and has sex for the first time. Mm. And I loved doing it.
It was so good. And listen, I've been picking through your Instagram, which is great. You've been busy. You were at Evita in London.
Oh.
You've binge-watched The Bear.
Yes.
You've been writing poetry. Mm. And you met Patrick Duffy, a.k.a. Bobby Ewing, and his lovely partner, Linda Pearl, for dinner in Dublin. He looks exactly the same, like he's just
gorgeous.
Come out of the shower.
Gorgeous, with the gray hair instead of the black hair. But aside from that, the face is the same. And she is as beautiful as she was when I first saw her at a TV show called The Young Pioneers. And she was fighting the locusts. And I remember thinking, oh, this is a good one. So I got an email from her that said, I know that my husband did your show 30 years ago. And I've always wanted to meet you, and we're going to be in Dublin. Could we buy you dinner? And I'm like, I'm going to buy you dinner, and we're going to go to Crudo, my favorite restaurant in Sandymount. And that's what we did. And we had a wonderful, wonderful time. And they're lovely. And Patrick just did a show about going to interview different people in different parts of Ireland. And a beautiful couple. And I'm very happy for them. And they told me their story of how they met. It was so romantic.
What is it?
That they met during COVID, but then it was COVID, so they had to FaceTime. So like for a year, they FaceTimed before they were able to really even get together and hold hands, you know? Mm. Very romantic. And to find love at that age too, you know, they're a little bit older than me, not much. I think Linda is very close to my age, but, you know, that it just gives you hope.
Are you in love?
You know, I try to keep that private, but I'll tell you after the show. But yeah, no, I'm very happy. I have somebody in my life that's there and has been there for a long time. And we don't live together, but it really does work. And they're an artist. She's an artist. And you know, it's a very compatible, mutually beneficial relationship.
It's great, but it means you have someone special.
I do have someone,
which is lovely.
Yes.
Common Knowledge, your new show.
Yes.
Dublin and going to Edinburgh.
Yes.
Tell me about it. And will you be including President Trump's latest message about you from yesterday?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to ask the director whether he thinks we should put that in, but perhaps we should. I kind of left him out because I wanted to take this from moving to Ireland to the day that I'm in Edinburgh. I wanted to tell the story of my childhood and coming to Ireland as a child and then coming back as an adult with my child, the same age I was when I was first here, and how life is cyclical and how it's a circle game and we go round and round and round, right? So that's the story and the message. It's about motherhood. It's about family. It's about finding a home and the world and where do you belong? So I'm not sure that Trump fits in there. I know that when it's over, I'm going to do another show next year, hopefully called Bad Parenting, because we talked a little about that before the show today, about how, you know, I think I smoothed the road too much for my kids, which left them really thrown by little bumps and little things that we all have to, you know, and I'm not trying to do the same thing for Clay because it didn't work out so well. I think that there's a little bit of challenges and adversarial times and you don't always get your way and mommy can't fix everything and you have to kind of, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that old Irish adage, right? Mm-hmm. And so that will be the next one. But the one after that, and hopefully he'll be long gone by then, is going to be just about me and Trump.
You know? Your relationship.
The whole thing, from the first moment that I made fun of him until yesterday.
interesting though, the one that you're going to do about bad parenting. In other words, people do worry if you too do everything for your children, does it make it difficult for them to deal with obstacles in life?
Correct.
But do you think you would be as successful as you are if your mom hadn't died of breast cancer when you were so young? Or is that impossible to know?
I think it's impossible to know, but I feel strongly that I wouldn't be a performer. Mm. I think people who are performers are dying for some sort of love that they lost in some way, and there's an unfulfillable hole. And, you know, it can feel like love, mass adulation from the multitudes, but it's not. It's something different. And what you're craving is only found in family and in humanity and in interactions, in compassion and empathy. That's where you find the meaning of your life, not in how much money you have or how many fans are on your Facebook or whatever, you know?
So, and one of the promo lines for your new show, Common Knowledge, is that you don't have life all figured out. That's probably, I was thinking, a really good philosophy for the life we all live. Do you think that?
Yes, because you never can. And, you know, Joni Mitchell, who is like the best artist living, I think, she, you know, her lyrics are all poems. And she wrote in this one song, things that you held high and told yourself were true are lost or changing as the days come down to you. Right. So you can hold these truths and these stories that we tell ourselves to define who we are, what we mean and our goodness. But they get lost and they change as you age and you find maturity and wisdom. And, you know, menopause is freedom in many ways.
Yeah.
It's freedom to stand up in just who you are as a woman and to be activated and use your voice in ways that that you hadn't felt you could before. And so, you know, at 63, I'm very excited for whatever the future has to bring.
You look great. Liam in Dublin says, you are amazing, Rosie. We love having you home in Ireland. You are safe here. Don't let anything grind you down, Irish sister. Harriet, however, says, Miriam, I love your show, but Rosie does not represent the average American citizen, nor even the average Democrat. She's going for the usual attacks against calling President Trump a racist, etc. Tell the lie often enough, people start to believe it. If she cares so much for her country, why is she here? If the Democrats did such a good job, how come they lost their base?
I didn't say the Democrats did such a good job, number one.
Oh.
And number two, he is a racist. And you can see that all his attacks now are on brown people, right? They're not on white people doing crimes. They're on brown people and black people. And what I would say is the reason I moved was self-preservation. I needed to keep myself healthy and alive and mentally stable enough to raise an autistic child. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason I left. I left because I love the United States of America, not because I don't. I love democracy and what it stands for. I love the Constitution. I love what our founding fathers represented and made in this world as a beacon of hope and freedom for the rest of the world. Now, there are many problems with the United States and the fact that we think we can butt into every other country's business and change regimes. And, you know, we have made tremendous mistakes as a country. But until we own what is true about our country and ourselves, we're never going to be able to move forward. And until we own what is true about Donald Trump and everything that I've said about him is true.
Well, Rosie, it's been my privilege having you as my guest. Sometimes you meet people who are very well known and they're a disappointment.
Yes.
You're a joy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really mean that. You were so lovely to everyone. Thanks so much for coming in. You're going to be in the Three Olympia with your stand-up show, Common Knowledge, on Sunday, the 27th of July. Tickets on Ticketmaster.ie. And then you're taking it to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival from the 1st to the 10th of August. So lovely to meet you, Rosie.
Lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Let's take a break. Some on Rosie O'Donnell. Thomas says, great interview, but I can't help thinking that Rosie O'Donnell is really bitter that Trump got the best of her. And I'll end on one from Siobhan Linus, who says, absolutely loved listening to Rosie. Mam turned off the radio and I turned it back on. You're both welcome in Wexford for the flat.